Good morning and welcome to another edition of St. Louis Voices. I'm Jill Devine, and I've said this so many times when I do this interview or this PSA show that I am always enlightened because there are a lot of things that I don't know that are happening in the world, and this show brings it to me and it brings it to the community too. And something else that we have learn on this show, it's not just about the organizations that you can go and look up and volunteer at, but also these different initiatives, so to speak. And I have two guests joining me this morning. One, no stranger, Dina Ladd. She's the executive director with Missouri Cures. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me back.
And that's why you're back, to talk about this initiative that we talked about before. And that's where Sharon comes in. Sharon Deem, you are the director of Institute for Conservation Medicine at the St. Louis Zoo, correct?
That is correct.
One of many titles.
Yes.
We would be here all day if I went through all of her titles. And we're going to talk about this particular initiative that's happening, specifically what you're doing with it at our very own St. Louis Zoo. But let's go back to Dina. Dina, you are with Missouri Cures, and that's what we talked about last time when you were in. So let's just kind of touch on that for a minute and then get into the initiative that we're here to talk about.
So Missouri Cures, we are a statewide organization. We promote all medical research taking place in the state, but more importantly, we also protect medical research in the state. So I have the pleasure of going around the state and working with Washington U, SLU, University of Missouri, Stowers, and really hearing about all the wonderful initiatives and research going on. And through some of my connections, I had the pleasure of meeting Sharon and also Dean Carolyn Henry, who's the dean of the vet school at MU, and they are really instrumental and involved with this One Health initiative.
And so when you were here last, we talked briefly about that, but more off the air because of my love for animals and how these creatures are really helping humans in so many different ways. And so you, off the air, talked to me about the One Health Initiative, and you said that there are these two amazing women, one right here in St. Louis, one not too far in Columbia, Missouri, that you have to talk to. And here we are. So excited to learn more. So let's start with the One Health Initiative and what it's all about.
This One Health Initiative is really this collaborative effort of many different disciplines coming together to optimize the health of humans, animals, and the environment. And our understanding of how connected, like you just said, how connected human health is with the health of the animals that we live with, that might be on our dinner table, that are out in the environment, keeping that healthy for us, and how we all need fresh air, fresh water, and healthy environments.
Okay, so how did this all come together? How did this initiative form, so to speak?
So the One Health Initiative in sort of the form it is today is probably the last decade, give or take a year or two, but really it's an old concept. And I would say if we go back to the beginning of medicine, we were much more One Health practitioners.
Okay.
We were sort of more generalist in human medicine, in veterinary medicine. And maybe with time, as time passed, we got a little specialized. I could go see my hand doctor today, and I could go see my dentist and my heart doctor. And so we became sort of more focused at the same time when some of our health challenges for humans and other animals have become sort of more broad. And so we need this more holistic approach at the same time when maybe our specialties got a little more focused and siloed.
Gotcha. Okay. We're going to get back into the One Health Initiative, but of course, Sharon, I have to know your background. I have to know, I mean, you're at our wonderful St. Louis Zoo, and you must have a love for animals if you are doing what you're doing. This isn't just a job for you, based on the information
yes.
I've read about you. So can we go back a little bit and
sure.
talk about that?
I would love to do that. So, I call myself a One Health practitioner, and I think I have been since day one. You know, I grew up in suburban Maryland with a bed full of what we used to call stuffed animals. We now call them plush animals. And I did many different doctor things to my animals growing up.
Really?
And I was very much trying to decide, was it human medicine or veterinary medicine that I was interested in? And as I grew up and had many different experiences with my father having a Texas Longhorn and Arabian horse ranch out in Washington State, where I spent many, many years, many summers working, I realized much more that it was the animal side of medicine I was interested in and pursued that with a veterinary degree and getting involved in animal health. But then coming full circle, I really understand with this One Health initiative that I, as a veterinarian, have a very important role in human health and environmental health because of these connections.
It's crazy how they all loop together and how one can truly affect the other. And I don't think many people today realize that still. I think we have a long way to go.
Well, you know, they used to look at humans to see how can we treat animals, you know, with their sickness. And now I think with this comparative medicine, One Health, they're looking at animals, dogs, and what they're doing to help dogs with different sicknesses. And now they can use it and apply it to humans.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really fascinating how it's kind of flipped.
Have you been met with people that say, wait, is this a dangerous thing that you're doing with the animals? Or is everyone pretty accepting of the fact that this is what we need to do to figure out these next steps?
So that's a great question. And I think what Dina is referring to, comparative and translational medicine, is really we as persons trained as veterinarians are very good at comparative medicine. We treat all species except for the human animal, right? In our license, we are licensed to treat animals across that spectrum.
Okay.
And so comparative medicine comes naturally to us. A cat may have a little bit different diseases than a dog, than a guinea pig, than the polar bear at the zoo. So there are comparative differences. And I think where we are today with the translational or comparative side of One Health is we really do understand many of our pets get cancers, right?
Oh, it's the worst.
Just like many of our people, we know cancer is a very important clinical disease right now for the human population as well as the animal population. And some of the studies and a lot of work that Dr. Carolyn Henry has led as an oncologist or a cancer doctor in veterinary medicine, many of those studies looking at cancers in dogs, and we're not talking, you know, experimental research. We're talking about dogs that come into the clinic that are owned by a person like one of us, and we can look at those cancers and get a better understanding and have some comparison with human populations. So oncologists or cancer medical doctors and cancer veterinary doctors are working together to understand some of those links. So for example, if my dog has cancer and my dog is drinking the same water I drink and living in the same house I live in and eating the same foods and the air, and we can see where there may be environmental links at that sort of dog-human interface. And that's the comparative side of One Health.
Got it. Okay. And Dr. Carolyn Henry, she is right down the street in Columbia, mm-hmm. Missouri. Mm-hmm. We've talked about the Mizzou Vet Hospital there. I mean, it's the best. This is where we send so many of our animals that are sick or going through some sort of intense surgery. And she's helping lead this.
She, and I can give a personal example. Just last summer, a really good friend of mine, his dog had cancer. So I thought, oh my gosh, I got to call, you know, Carolyn and see, because I knew about the vaccines they were mm-hmm. using and it could the dog qualify to get into, you know, the program and so forth. And she and her staff were just really amazing. And we decided that the best option would be to get treatment for the dog. And so they also have a facility in Wentzville. So we didn't want to drive to Columbia every week. We went up to Wentzville and she did get the vaccine and so forth. And it prolonged her life for a bit, but unfortunately then she passed away. But what they're doing with the vaccines and I have the pleasure of traveling the country and working with researchers and promoting really what's going on in Missouri. I mean, I love going down to Houston and say, well, let me tell you what's going on in Missouri.
Good old Missouri.
And I have a dear friend at Baylor, and he has cured sarcoma in dogs, which is a horrible bone cancer. He's cured sarcoma in dogs through a vaccine, and he is now trying to figure out how to apply it to pediatric brain tumors.
The magnitude of that is kind of hard to even wrap your brain around. Okay, so then, Sharon, what are you doing locally to help with this?
So great question. And there's sort of two ways we can look at One Health. And
okay.
The comparative translational side, which we just discussed with sort of, we get very similar diseases to what other animals get. The side of One Health that my group has kind of focused more at here at the St. Louis Zoo is what we call the ecological side of One Health. And so that's really looking at sort of environmental conditions that may have impacts on the various wildlife species that we at the zoo work so hard to conserve. Mm-hmm. And really back to your original question, you know, why did One Health come around? And talked about the silos and these bigger sort of issues, public health issues, at the same time, this perfect storm to say, oh, we need a holistic approach to deal with these. In my career, which is has only expanded two or three decades, really, when we look at the conservation or ecological side of One Health, there are so many diseases that occur now in wildlife populations that have real population level impacts. And I'm going to give you a great example and tie it back to One Health. But these diseases, often infectious diseases, which we call emerging infectious diseases,
okay,
can have catastrophic impacts on wildlife species and have even led to the extinction of species that share the planet with us. So those are big things to say, right?
Right.
But the One Health approach really is about solutions. We know we have these challenges, but we also have the ability to look at the challenges and come up with solutions. And what we focus on in our programs is really saying, what are those health challenges to the wildlife we want to conserve? How does that impact the species? But I can 6 degrees of One Health with anyone, and I can tie back a disease in wildlife and why it has a public health implication as well, why it impacts your family and my family. And I'm going to give an example.
Yes, I was going to say, can you?
I'm going to give a great example for us in Missouri. So you may be familiar with white nose syndrome. Maybe.
Maybe.
Some of your listeners probably, when I said that, they went, bing, yeah, I've heard of that. So white nose syndrome is the fungus. It's a fungal infection that came into the U.S. in 2006, so about 11 years ago now, native to Europe. We brought it over, so humans like to carry diseases with us, right? So,
it's such a fun thing.
But we brought it over, and our bats, so bats in our country were what is called naive. They had never seen this fungus before, and so it impacted them, and it led to the mortality or death of many different species of bats.
Okay.
To the tune of about 7 million bats in the last 10 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Right? So many of us and many of the listeners might be, well, oh, they're bats, right? Well, so it's a disease just of bats. It's a wildlife disease of bats. But then we can think, what do bats do for me? What's a bat done for me today, right? Well, they pollinate. And what's the big thing they do? They eat pests like mosquitoes. So every bat eats about 3,500 mosquitoes a night. So I see your eyes.
I know, my brain is turning. I don't want to interrupt.
Right? So, but you're seeing where this wildlife bat disease is suddenly starting to have an impact on me. If we've lost about 7 million bats, and each of those per night eat about 3,500 mosquitoes, And they, so we've lost our pest control. We, the human population now, may be exposed to more mosquitoes. And where am I going with that?
The West Nile virus. West,
and what else now? Zika?
Zika.
So all these things that we've all heard of, because they're in the news today, and there may be this correlation. It's a wildlife disease we brought in. You don't need to love bats, but you do know what bats are doing for you every day, pollinating and eating pests. And losing that, what we call ecosystem service, may have real health implications for us. And that's when people start saying, what about this bat disease? We need to do something.
Now it's making sense. It's
right.
making sense.
Right.
Well, and then you could even say with the mosquitoes, even tying it back to the animals, our dogs, with the heartworm issues because of the mosquitoes. I mean, that's how they get it. And I know a lot about that because my dog went through that horrible, awful thing. So, and then seriously, my eyes were getting big when you were talking about it because when I was pregnant, I knew I had to watch out for the Zika virus because of the mosquitoes. Oh my gosh, this
Correct.
Is crazy.
Well, and then also, I don't know, Sharon, and maybe I'm wrong here, but you know, we're in such a big ag space and also the pests, you know, that can really affect agriculture and so forth. So it affects in a different way, I think. And yeah, it's all tied together, full circle.
Total full circle. Yeah. So, okay, Sharon, are you actually in the trenches trying to find different vaccines, or are you doing, you know, the environmental research? What are you doing? Because I don't think anyone that's listening right now, have you grasped the concept that she is right here at the St. Louis Zoo? This is a big deal.
So I love that segue. The St. Louis Zoo, which I've been a staff member for 10 years, is one of the finest zoos in the world.
Yes.
And what many people don't realize, not just in our fence, our collection, and our ability to really reach out and inspire people to care about animals, to care about nature, to care about their world. There is so much that is taking place globally. We have a global footprint with many of our conservation programs. So my part of it, the Conservation Medicine Institute, we have roughly 8 projects around the globe looking at this ecological side of One Health, and some of those are right here in Missouri. So we have many of these projects to try to better understand that link we just talked about. We are not the people who are developing a vaccine. So we're not at your zoo developing vaccines, but we are the ones that are helping to collect the data to better understand the disease issues that threaten wildlife populations and the disease issues that are at that interface.
Okay.
And then we also work very closely, as so many of our programs at the zoo do. We collaborate immensely with the Washington University Med School, with Mizzou and the veterinary program there, with Fontbonne University here in St. Louis. So we have collaborations with the more academic side of One Health. And so our programs really, as One Health is, collaborative effort, have those sort of different specialties working together to come up with the solutions.
And I was going to say, so Carolyn, Dean Henry works really closely with Washington University Oncology Department, and they've put on an amazing symposium. Sharon, you were there, you spoke. And so I love that, you know, they are working together with Washington U in the oncology department, because I have a printout here from Mizzou, and it's, you know, they are a member of the National Cancer Institute's prestigious Comparative Oncology Trials Consortium and the Canine Comparative Oncology and Genomics Consortium. So they're working very close together. And, Jill, you had mentioned, well, you know, working with these animals, you know, are you hurting them? And people are always concerned about, you know, research and with animals. No, they're trying to cure cancer and diseases in dogs, and how it also can help humans, because, you know, there's a limited number of oncology drugs out there. Clinical trials take a long time to get drugs passed and get through the FDA and different stages, and there's a shorter period with animals, is my understanding. Mm-hmm. so they can do the trials with the dogs. And they, you know, like I said, they cured sarcoma. One researcher, and so they can take that, apply it to humans, and hopefully that will speed along the approval process of certain vaccines.
So let me ask a question about, if we're talking about vaccines, something that is kind of off of that, but mental health is a huge issue in this country today. Are we doing anything, or I guess should I ask, is the One Health Initiative working on that side of things?
Absolutely. And I think, I'm so glad you brought this question up, because I think a lot of times, you know, we've mentioned translational, comparative, One Health, ecological. From the mental health side of it, we and each of us in this room can kind of picture the first pet we ever had, or we might be going, I'm going home to a dog today, right? So we know that human-animal bond is so important for our mental health,
yes,
right? So I think we've seen, and there have been numerous publications on this, scientific publications on the role of animals in our lives from a psychological standpoint. One of the really neat things we did in conjunction with Mizzou, actually, with the veterinary college, a few years ago, we had a study we did of people at the zoo interacting, you know, our touch tank where you get to rub the stingrays,
yes,
and feel all good. And we did this really cool study looking at how people felt before their 10 minutes hanging out with the stingrays. After and during it, we looked at heart rate variability. So we are looking at the psychological and physiological side of interacting with animals. And we found from the psychological side, as you might expect, but you know, 10 minutes petting a stingray, you felt more energized, you felt happier, and you were less tense, right? Okay.
I mean, absolutely.
Absolutely. So the one qualifier I'll say is we also, as you may know, we have sharks in the tank with stingrays. So there were a few little blips on the heart rate when the sharks would swim by, but that's okay. That's part of it. But the point is, and there have been numerous studies in the last decade or so really showing how nature is important for human mental health. So we've even a term was coined called nature deficit disorder. So we know in children today, a lot of our kids are watching a screen, mm-hmm, way too many hours a day and not getting out and interacting with nature. We know from a One Health standpoint, we know that obesity and diabetes, attention deficit are all increasingly prevalent in children today in the U.S. Part of that may be this disconnect from nature. So again, one of the big things my group does and many other departments at the St. Louis Zoo is we connect kids with nature. One of our programs is the St. Louis Box Turtle Project, which I hope you know about, where we have taken thousands of school kids out into Forest Park to go on turtle safaris. So we have little telemetry devices on box turtles.
Oh, my gosh.
And they get to go out there with their antenna and play Doctari and feel, you know, be part of the science, because we record where the turtle is and we connect kids to nature. And that's part of One Health. So it's important for people to understand that conservation isn't just in Africa. We live with many different species in Missouri. But it's also, to, from the One Health perspective, it's to try to improve kids' time out in nature, their mm-hmm, interaction with animals. Because we know both physically, obesity, diabetes, it's important, but mentally it's important. So the mental health impacts and importance of nature. They, in Japan right now, they have something, I don't know if you've heard of this, called forest bathing. Forest bathing. So it's part of therapy for mental health issues. You go into nature and you're around trees. It's called forest bathing, and it's to help with mental health issues. Makes sense to me. I'm more chilled when I'm in forest,
in the mountains, like peaceful,
in the mountains.
Yes.
Forest mm-hmm park.
So we need biodiversity, we need animals, we need healthy environments for so many ways, and that mental health connection piece is also very important.
So in the last few minutes that I have with both of you, can we talk about expectations or goals, what is next? What's on the horizon?
Well, I mean, I was just going to give a couple of quick examples to kind of show again with the One Health going back to medical research. MU, with the Broad Institute, they discovered the genetic mutation responsible for degenerative myelopathy in dogs. It's the same mutation that causes ALS. How fascinating. And so they are working with Washington University on that. And also the comparative orthopedic laboratory performed the first ever surgeries to regenerate damaged tissues in dog knees. And so now this procedure is ready for human clinical trials. So again, just kind of, you're saying next steps. So I think it's just continuing to work together to see how on the medical side, how as they're treating dogs and finding different mutations or vaccines, how they can continue to apply that to humans. And I think it's moving along pretty quickly.
And then I would say, and hopefully your listeners have enjoyed this, and hopefully some of them are like, wow, this concept, this approach, this movement is important, and I'm going to start Googling One Health, right, to really learn more about what this is. But I would ask all of us to kind of think today, think about the interconnections of your life with the life of all other living forces that you interact with today, whether it's on your dinner plate, whether it's your companion animal at home, whether you see an eagle flying overhead and working to eat prey to keep the ecosystem in balance. I really would ask of all of us to just kind of think of those interconnections. And I'll end with one thought that many of us don't realize. And, you know, I talk about the dinner table, but many humans are omnivores, right? Or we're carnivores. We eat animals. And that is one of the very close relationships between human and animals. And when we think in a One Health context, I just recently read that the average American will eat food from 30 countries today in one day. And let's think about it. My coffee today might have been from Colombia and Peru, but the food we eat may have come to us from 30 different countries in one day. So to think about that in this ecological full circle, we're all interconnected, and why the health across the globe is important, even to us sitting in St. Louis or anywhere in Missouri, that we are a global world. And these interconnections are, and food is one of those big connections, mm-hmm. geographically, across species. So I think it's very important for all of us to kind of just sit back and think about One Health in the context of how connected you are to all other life forms.
I definitely, my head is spinning. I'm like, oh, I didn't even, oh, yeah, oh my gosh, that's amazing. So if I want to send the listeners to a website to learn more or to donate or whatever it may be, where should they go?
So I would recommend two sites, and the first one is on the St. Louis Zoo, the St. Louis Zoo in general, but the Institute for Conservation Medicine. We have a number of pages on the website that go into each of our different One Health projects in more detail. And so hopefully folks would see across the sort of programs we're doing, and I can get you that link. And then one other area, and that's where I would send your donors.
Do you hear that? Money.
Where I would send the donor side. But there's also a One Health Commission, and many of us are involved in that, and our program is. And that is sort of I don't want to call it a clearinghouse, but it's kind of the overseen body of all of us that are involved in One Health. And so that has a lot of information on events going on. And we, again, here in Missouri, both Mizzou and the zoo, we have programs that come up on their page. But that would be sort of a more broad look of what many different programs are doing.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. And then Missouri Cures.
So if you want to know the latest and greatest medical research going on in Missouri, we put 3 to 4 stories a week on our website, which is MissouriCures.org. Also follow us on Facebook and Twitter, because we push all the medical stories out on our social media. But on the website, we have clinical trial information. We have updates on all types of diseases. So MissouriCures.org.
I can't wait to have you all back. Hopefully, if I still have a job here in a few years, to be like, where are we and what is next? This is so awesome.
It's very
exciting.
Thank
you to the both of you.
Thank you. One Health is about all of us. We're all One Health practitioners. So I think it's about all of us.
Thank you for coming in and sharing your information and your expertise. And that does it for another edition of St. Louis Voices.